From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Magic with Jason Louvre. Here's what's happening. The Justice Department unsealed charges against two Russian men in what authorities say was one of the worst computer hacking and bank fraud schemes of the past decade. The Treasury Department said the Russian malware infected hundreds of banks worldwide and caused more than $100 million in theft. The two men have not been arrested. Their whereabouts are unknown. They're probably living high on the hog somewhere. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi says that she has directed a House committee to draft articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump over his apparent efforts to pressure Ukraine to investigate a political rival, a historic step that really sets up a fight over whether to oust him from office if this goes through. Iran has used the continuing chaos in Iraq to build up a hidden arsenal of short-range ballistic missiles in Iraq, part of a widening effort to try to intimidate the Middle East and assert its power, according to American intelligence sources. The State Department official says that 1,000 or more protesters may have been killed in Iran during the weeks of unrest there, and that the United States has received video that shows troops firing machine guns mounted on trucks at protesters in one of the incidents. The protesters were really protesting the increased price of petroleum and gasoline in that country. Dr. Jerome Corsi, author of Atomic Iran, is with us here. Jerry, this is a very tense situation. I'm hearing from some Iranian people that I know in California. They think Iran's going to go down. What do you think?
Well, George, there's a possibility. Again, you've got the protesters in the streets all over Iran, and the problem is increased gas prices. That's at least the precipitant cause. I think really the sanctions the United States has put on Iran are beginning to affect the economy and the ability of people to survive. And I expect the protests are going to get more intense. I don't think they're going to be stopped even with the shooting, although the history of protests is eventually this regime kills enough people or arrests enough people, the protesters stop. But the economics are getting pretty desperate and the sanctions are working. And I think George, Iran is getting more desperate.
I think you're right, too. Can you just imagine 1,000 protesters gunned down? It must have been awful, Jerry.
Oh, I think it's horrible. I know the Iranians in California and in New York and around the world, and my heart goes out for what the Iranian people are suffering. I think the Iranians, who are really Persians, great culture going back thousands of years, would like to get rid of this regime that has been so horrible on the Iranian people. And with these new missiles being found in Iraq, George, I think the likelihood is the Pentagon will be considering sending 3,000 to 4,000 more troops into the region. And the tension is ramping up again, George, with Iran.
I think so too, Jerry. It's a much bigger show too, because I'd love to talk with you about how the Shah of Iran got ousted and how that all collapsed. He was no Boy Scout by any means. I mean, he had his own treachery. President Donald Trump's comments on military force and the North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un would represent a very dangerous challenge if they were intended to provoke North Korea, according to a top North Korean diplomat. What they're saying is, in 2017, the two leaders famously engaged in a war of words, with Mr. Trump calling Kim the Rocket Man and North Korea slamming the U.S. president. Since then, Mr. Trump and Kim have met 3 times, but negotiations over North Korea's nuke weapons and ballistic missile arsenal have stalled amid disagreements and rising tensions. But how tense is the situation? Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, what do you think about this one?
Well, I think we might have a Christmas, a unique Christmas present sent to Washington. It may be a ballistic missile.
Oh, my God.
I think this is deteriorating so much right now. And part of the reason it's deteriorating, George, is because Trump is in quicksand right now, you know, with this impeachment. Now, maybe he'll escape the quicksand, but, you know, it's occupying 24/7 everything that he does. And, you know, the foreign policy of dealing with Iran, dealing with North Korea, is, you know, paralyzed right now. They're in absolute paralysis. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, is talking about running for, you know, Senate, maybe in Kansas. I mean, this is absolute deterioration in any kind of management of U.S. foreign policy. And North Korea, Trump was on the sidelines just 2 days ago of the NATO summit in London and starts talking about how Kim likes firing off missiles. That's why he calls him Rocket Man. Well, the North Korean KCNA news agency today fired off, you know, some very provocative statements about the Goddard, you know, bringing that up again.
Yeah.
And saying they're hoping that it was just an inadvertent slip on his part. But there's nothing inadvertent about this. The UN, as we speak right now, is getting ready to pass a resolution condemning North Korea and their for human rights violations. And they're blaming, the North Koreans are blaming the United States. So I think, you know, when you talk about tensions in Iran, there's horrific, you know, violence going on over there, like the Nazi regime almost. I mean, but in North Korea, we're talking about nuclear ballistic missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles that could hit the mainland of the United States if this thing spirals out of control. And they have not met the Kim's demand that something be done on the peace treaty or, you know, the denuclearization issue along the North Korean lines by the end of the year. And we're pretty close to the end of the year now, and there's no indication that the Trump administration is doing anything except to get ready, priming itself to defend itself in the U.S. Senate for impeachment.
You don't think, though, the North would be dumb enough to launch against us or even Japan, do you?
Well, they're going to launch a ICBM or at least an intermediate range missile probably sometime between now and Christmas.
As a test.
Test. They've already notified the Japanese government that there's going to be another long-range missile test.
Not good. John, thanks. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. Here's a new study that says the average person can't last 4 hours with their family over the holidays. So just Thanksgiving, if you went to see your family or they came to see you, could you last more than 4 hours? The holidays are supposed to be a time to come together with family and celebrate. But this new study finds that most Americans can barely get through an evening with their family before needing a break. A total of 2,000 Americans who usually travel to visit family during the holidays took part in this research, and some 75% say that they inevitably needed to get away from their relatives and indulge in some kind of needed me time. How about that? Have you ever been to a store called Dollar General Stores? Well, they're opening up 1,000 new stores in the United States next year. It is one of the fastest-growing retailers in America, attracting customers with rock-bottom prices on snacks and household goods. It's so confident in the strategy that it plans to open 1,000 new stores in 2020, just as it has been doing for the past several years. Up next, our economic expert, Catherine Austin Fitz, joins us for a couple hours. We're going to be talking about stagnating wages, the cost of living, and where did $21 trillion go? She's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our special guest for the next couple hours, Catherine Austin Fitz. She has served as a managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street investment bank Dillon Reed and Company. She is the person we turn to for economic advice. She was also an assistant secretary of housing at the federal housing at HUD in the first Bush administration as well. Noted author, website Solari.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to be talking with Catherine about a number of things. Catherine, good news about that Dollar General company adding 1,000 more stores next year.
Wow. It's funny because I have so many of those stores around me. I can't believe they'd add any more in my area, but I see them all over the country, George, so they're clearly growing.
Just when you see retail stores shutting down because of Amazon and online shopping, it's just great to know that something's succeeding out there.
Well, here's what's interesting. If you drive around the country, what you see is the malls are emptying out, but a little bit further than the malls are, you see these huge distribution centers going up. And so the, you know, the jobs are going much more to the transportation than to the sort of retail in the store. But Dollar General seems to be, you know, going the other way. So we'll see what happens.
Well, and what stays strong is at least the manufacturing sector for some of these products, because whether they're sold online or in retail establishments, they're still selling and people are buying the stuff.
Well, yeah, but I think we're coming into a period. Well, we've been in a period for a long time. I call it the slow burn, where household expenses and sort of essential needs are going up in price faster than wages. So the middle class for many years and all working people have been squeezed badly, and I think we're in a period where that's going to accelerate.
Catherine, let's talk about this missing money that you have so aggressively talked with us about. That number now is up to what, $21
trillion? $21 trillion. And George, I went back and looked. The first time you and I got on Coast to Coast to talk about the missing money was in 2005, and it was $4 trillion.
My God!
We'd done something about it then? Yeah. It kept going. What happened was there was, in 2015, there was an enormous increase in the undocumentable adjustments that year. It was $6.5 trillion at DOD, and I think about $300 billion at HUD. And I started talking about it again on the radio, as I have every year for almost two decades now. And Dr. Mark Skidmore from Michigan State University heard me talking about it and he thought, well, she must be wrong. And then he went and looked at the DOD financials and realized, no, I was right. And he called me and he said, what can I do to help? So he and a group of students did a survey, and I'd had the number at that point up to $12 trillion. They did a survey of all of the Department of Defense financials from fiscal 1998 to 2017, and then the same for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. And they identified $21 trillion. And
jeez.
It was very interesting because he used to call me and say, oh, my God, we found another trillion.
Yeah.
And it was a magical moment because that $21 trillion at the time was the equivalent of our outstanding, at least on the books, debt. Now, one thing I want to say is undocumentable adjustments can be revenues or expenses. But what it speaks to is certainly a running of the financial statements and the government finances in a way that is way outside the Constitution, the laws in the Constitution related to how financial disclosure and financial management should work, and very much outside of the financial management laws. If you go to our website, we now have a special website that just provides all the documentation behind anything I could say about this. It's missingmoney.solari.com. You can also link to it from solari.com, and we have copies of all the government documentation. After Dr. Skidmore published his report on this, the government took all the documentation down. But we fortunately had it on our website, and after it became clear that it wasn't coming down, they put theirs back up and said, oh, we're just reorganizing our website.
Was Dr. Skidmore's work, Catherine, tantamount to an audit, basically?
No, it was a survey, an audit. To do anything that you or I would call an audit, you have to dig down into the data, and we don't have access to that data. We only have access to the published reports. After Dr. Skidmore kept asking questions, what happened is they published a new report explaining some of the adjustments, and George, something happened that I have never seen in all my career working as an investment banker with government or working as a government official, and that is the Inspector General published a report and the black budget guys redacted every number, including part of the title.
Amazing. What do you think?
Go ahead.
What do you think has been done with the money and who took it?
So I think when you're talking about this much money, we're talking about an extraordinary amount of money in many years, more than the size of the U.S. government. Something which is very possible if you're issuing securities off book and not reporting them on the books. So it is absolutely possible for $21 trillion in cash to go missing, although I think some of this is revenues being laundered back in from across the planet, you know, when you're occupying other countries, one of the things armies do is they get booty. But so I think it's very hard to guess as to how much cash this is. But the reality is, I think, starting in 47 and 49 with the 47 Act and the CIA Act, and then with progressive executive orders and other changes, we've built an enormous part of the national security infrastructure, which is secret and very, very expensive. From, you know, if you look at our space expenditures coming into the Kennedy years, they were rising at a certain rate. You had a certain percentage to the GDP or a certain percentage to the federal budget. And then with the Kennedy assassination, it flatlined. And I think the truth is it really kept rising on the trend level. We just took that part dark. So I think a significant amount of it is going to covert global operations, both in the financial markets and, of course, boots on the ground. So one of the great strengths behind the U.S. dollar has been tremendous amounts of covert funds available and credit available through the governmental mechanism, whether it's the exchange stabilization fund, derivatives operations, manipulation in the gold market to really make sure that the U.S. and the U.S. dollar remains the reserve currency and the sort of the dominant financial market and financial system globally. So, you know, whether it's taking us into space or building things underground or investing in new weaponry or making sure that, you know, we have not just a nuclear arsenal but a financial nuclear arsenal, I think a lot of this money has gone to the covert side of projecting power.
Catherine, a couple of years ago during the Obama administration, billions of dollars in cash was given to the Iranians. They landed a plane there, unloaded the money, and just gave it to them for purposes I don't know. Could some of that cash have come from this $21 trillion fund?
I don't know how that was funded. My understanding was, and I think the truth of this is murky, but we had frozen Iranian accounts, and so in theory, some of it could have just come from the money in the accounts that we froze, although it wouldn't surprise me if that money had disappeared long ago. I think a lot of it, I think there's been a lot of money disappearing from HUD and from DOD that's been laundered through other countries around the world. You know, I hate to say it, the rumors and allegations of kickbacks on many of these deals, including the Iranian cash, are hot and heavy. And given the sort of behavior that we've seen in Congress in the last 2 to 3 years, you know, you kind of makes you wonder if they aren't true. But it's funny, George. To me, one of the most important events of the last 2 to 3 years is FASB 56. It's one of the things I wanted to talk about. In October of 2018, while most of America was focused on the Kavanaugh hearings,
right?
It looked like the Democrats, the Republicans, and Congress and the White House were fighting. Wrong. Enormous cooperation. What happened was the Office of Management and Budget for the Trump administration and the General Accountability Office for the Congress adopted a new policy. It's FASB 56. That stands for Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board, and it's Statement 56, basically saying that the U.S. government could take secret parts of its books. And what that means is that the covered agencies, so 24 covered agencies and approximately 150 other federal entities, can take a part of their books and make them secret. So if you and I look at the financial statements for the U.S. government, we have no idea what they mean because we have no idea how much has been disappeared down the black hole. Now, I would tell you, I think that that policy is not legal under the Constitution or the financial management laws, and it certainly wasn't voted by, you know, approved by a vote of Congress. But
or us.
They're proceeding to do it. Now, what this means is, you know, I'll be perfectly blunt, George, your taxes or your pension fund can buy a Treasury security. That money can go to Treasury, and then it can leave through the back door and go to a private company or bank without any transfer of benefit coming the other way. And there's nothing, you know, there's no way for us to know that that isn't happening.
Nothing we can do about it. Catherine, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about this study, this investigation, and we'll also talk about jobs in this country and what else is going on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, this standards, of course, this Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board Statement 56. Tell us the significance of what this means.
Well, what this means is that a secret group of people who you can't know, by a secret process that you can't know, can take any part of any government agency or 150 related agencies' financial information secret, which means when you look at the financial statements, they're meaningless. Now, what this also means when you combine it with the classification rules that apply to companies doing business with the government, so the big banks and big corporations, you also don't know what their financials mean because they can get secret waivers of the disclosure provisions of the SEC rules. And so what this really means, George, is that you've just taken the majority of the U.S. financial market dark. You know, if I'm interested in buying a stock of a company that does a lot of business with the government, I have no idea what their financials mean. In other words, the financial statements, the financial disclosure of a majority of the U.S. securities market has become secret and, as a practical matter, meaningless.
And where do they get the money originally? Out of our taxes?
Well, the money comes from a number of sources, the big ones being selling Treasury securities or related federal or federally insured securities, as well as taxes. So that presumably is the primary source of money, although obviously, you know, we could be laundering money back from a variety of covert operations and activities.
Now, somewhere along the line, Catherine, there's got to be a secret organization within government that is doling out these checks to these undercover groups. Where do you think this group is located? Are they in Washington, D.C.? Are they at the Pentagon? Where are they?
So I can only guess. I mean, operationally, you have a group of people, civil service and contractors and banks, that are basically running the operation. So let me give you an example. When I became Assistant Secretary of Housing, it was really interesting. Under the law, I was required to run the FHA Single Family Fund, George, on a supporting basis. So our expenses, our revenues had to cover our expenses from the mortgage insurance premiums. So I called in my budget officer and I said, there's nowhere here in the budget that tells me if we're making or losing money. He said, well, that's not in the budget. They report to a different assistant secretary. So the accountants have that, and they report to a different assistant secretary, and you're not allowed to talk to them. And I said, well, that's going to change. And I got the accountants moved over to report to me. It took a month or two. And so it turned out we were losing $11 million a day. But when I tried to dig into the information, it turned out a lot of the data that I needed, you know, was held by the contractor who ran the payment systems and a lot of the data systems at HUD, and they would refuse to give me information. So I was the Assistant Secretary of Housing. I was supposed to be running the FHA, but my corporate contractor, a big defense contractor who was running the payment systems, wouldn't give me the data. And I used to have wars with them. I used to call it the data beast.
Vladimir Putin, who runs Russia, of course, has been talking about the U.S. dollar collapsing one day. Where is he getting this kind of information, or is it just rhetoric?
I don't know, George. He's, you know, clearly the Russians since 2005 have been moving their reserves, their currency reserves, out of the dollar, so they've moved to gold and bigger positions in the euro and the yen. They've also set up a lot of arrangements with the Chinese. So the Russian Central Bank has its first office outside of Russia, and they've opened up one in Beijing. And you see Russia and a lot of the central banks along the Silk Road not only boosting their gold reserves but doing lots of swaps. So many different mechanisms that will allow them to basically de-dollarize and not be as dependent on the dollar. But if you look at the market share of the dollar, both in trade, in oil trade, in reserves around the world, it's still very, very strong. So The question is Putin talking his book, trying to talk more people to move on to his platform or related platforms? Or does he know something we don't know? I'm about to publish next week a big report called The State of Our Currency. And this is the number one question I'm looking at, which is, if you look at all the mechanisms that have been created for many countries around the world to de-dollarize, how fast can they move serious liquidity into those mechanisms? To me, it looks really early, and it sounds like Putin is talking his book, but there's no doubt you have a significant effort around the world to reduce dependency on the dollar.
Could some of this money be used for a secret space force that we don't know about?
I am absolutely convinced that it is, both the underground basis to support a secret space program, but a secret space program as well. If you look at the reserve currency depends on, or that status for the dollar depends on significant amounts of weaponry. And of course, the hardest thing to determine is who's got what weapons. And there's no doubt about it. I think that both the satellite systems and whatever weapons we have that are space-based or high-altitude-based are very, very important.
Catherine, since you've been looking into this, are you running into any obstacles or anything going on with you?
Oh, always, George.
Yeah, I thought so.
It's really funny. It's hilarious. We call it spiritual warfare. It's constant. And, you know, if you look at how much money we spend on cybersecurity and dealing with denial of service attacks and all sorts of, you know, it's just war. Is all I can say. And, you know, and I don't think it just relates to government at all. I think it relates to a wide variety of competitors who, that's how they compete, is sort of slowing you down.
Since you've been doing this, and you've been doing this for a long time now, investigating and all that, do you think it's going to continue? Or because some people like yourself are aware of this, do they slow down?
Well, one way to think about the $21 trillion is a significant amount of that money, I believe, is going to centralize political and economic power. I mean, it gives a tremendous – think about it. You know, the big banks can borrow for 0%. The average credit card holder pays 17% in the United States of America. You know, that's a formidable advantage, George. So it doesn't take long, if I can borrow at 0%, for me to buy up everything. So we're watching tremendous centralization, in part financed by this control of the federal credit. And I think the question is, I've always believed that the effort would fail, but the question is, we have to get to a point where enough people are willing to say it is really this bad, and it's also really this destructive. And, you know, my feeling is ultimately the most important question that you and I and everybody listening to your show faces is, are we going to be a human society or an inhuman society? Because the reality is absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yep.
And people who can steal this much money and get away with this much, you know, they keep pushing the envelope and doing things which I think now we're watching policies go into effect in this country, which are a violation of the Nuremberg Code. So there's no doubt we're watching way too much corruption, and something's got to give.
Are they using some of this money for themselves? I mean, are they living high on the hog?
You know, certainly you're seeing a lot of money go to the people who will implement the system. So if you, for example, if you look at corporate stocks, what you'll see is a tendency to significantly overpay CEOs. What you do is you take shareholders' money, you use it to buy back shares, and then you proceed to transfer far more to the CEOs, you know, than I think you deserve, particularly for those operations that are really playing in a rigged system. If you look at the extent to which the banks got bailed out, you know, but the CEOs and the top management just kept paying a lot of money. If it doesn't belong to the government, it certainly belongs to the shareholders, or maybe we ought to reinstate the usury laws and people ought to pay, you know, 5 to 8% on their credit cards instead of 17%. So I just think, you know, you do have padding of a certain group of sort of corporate bureaucrats who are implementing the system.
Go ahead, Kath.
But I think if you look at the magnitude of whether it's $24 trillion on the bailouts or $21 trillion in missing money or other kinds of frauds and scams we've seen, you know, this is not Ferraris and offshore accounts, although that stuff is going on. This is, we're talking about a major parallel system. You know, some people refer to the breakaway civilization, but we're watching, you know, the society break into two standards, one who are above the law and the other who are micromanaged by more and more laws every day.
How long do you think this has been going on?
Well, in one shape or another, it's been going on my whole life. If you look at how 47, you had money seized at the end of World War II that went into the Exchange Stabilization Fund. You know, I call it the mother of all slush funds. And in one sense, I think of the United States history as the process by which we replenish that fund. But the 47 and 49 Act unfortunately created a very significant infrastructure that allowed money to go secret and to finance secret operations. And I will tell you, George, there's no greater financial addiction on this planet than secrecy. And it's grown and grown. If you trace it back to 47 and 49, you know, whether it's the hidden systems of finance that came out of the seizures or the, you know, the black budget that was authorized by the 47 and 49 Act, you know, we put the intelligence agencies in the business of being the most powerful banks in the world. And you're talking about agencies that are, you know, you're talking about flows of money that don't have to pay taxes and are free to engage in extreme covert operations all around the world. And what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to blow up on all of us. What's going on with inflation these days?
Well, I'm very concerned about inflation. If you look at the statistics of some of the really good websites that track the real rate of inflation, what you're seeing in the United States is a, depending on where you live, somewhere between 8 to 14% per year for the last 5 years in the increase of household goods. And there's wide variation, but for example, if you look at the rises in the price of education, you know, it's pretty scary, and it's one of the things that have put kids in the position of being way too heavily indebted. So we're talking about a significant rate in the real rate of inflation. Now, there are sectors in the economy, George, because of new technology, that are bringing costs down rapidly, and that's helping to offset it. And part of that is labor deflation all around the world, and that's mm-hmm. part of what comes with globalization. My concern is we are really seeing this effort globally to de-dollarize, and what that is going to mean is much greater inflation for the household goods. So I'm asking my subscribers to be prepared for the rate of inflation in household goods to double next year.
Wow. That's,
or even more, yeah.
That's not good for an incumbent president, is it?
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just telling people, please be prepared. And my number one concern, George, is not the price of goods. My number one concern is the safety issues created by debasement of quality in products. You know, when people try and save money on food and they debase the quality, you can get real safety issues. The other thing, the big safety issue, you know, I drive a lot. And what happens is when people are under stress and having trouble adapting to the squeeze of what I call the accelerating slow burn, you know, you get traffic accidents. You get people behaving erratically and not able to handle the stress. You get more crime. Mm. So my biggest concerns are safety issues, whether it's product safety or, you know, sort of bad behavior or erratic behavior by the people around you who are having trouble adjusting.
Well, crime does go up when there's people under stress and pressure.
Well, you just saw the announcement that the administration is thinking that changing the rules on food.
700,000 people. 700,000 right. people would be taken off the food stamp rolls.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because if you look at all the things we've done to shut down the small farmers, and part of the reason we did that, George, was it was so much cheaper to have big corporate farms offshore. You know, so instead of growing the food next door, my neighbors are going down to Walmart and they're buying food that's being trucked in from thousands, you know, hundreds or thousands of miles away. And, you know, that made sense when the dollar, when we had the strong dollar policy and the Chinese were, you know, buying all the treasuries in the world. Now that that's reversed, you know, that's going to put extreme pressure on the administration to take the U.S. breadbasket food, sell it abroad for, you know, to bring down the trade deficit and to cut imports. And so the pressure on things like food stamps are going to be very, very real.
Well, I got to tell you, even though there might have been some abuse with some of those 700,000 people on the rolls, the food stamp rolls, that's still a lot of people who probably need those food stamps to survive. And, you know, you take away food from somebody's plate, you've created a real big problem.
Right. And you've also created a real big problem. In Tennessee, the last time I looked in my state, almost 25%, I believe, are getting food stamps.
25% of the people in the state?
The last time I looked, and it was a while ago, George, it was a very high percent. So imagine what that's going to do to the whole grocery food chain throughout the state if you get a significant cut in the number of people on food stamps. So, you know, I agree with you. I think now if you look at any fraud, waste, and abuse on food stamps, you know, it is nothing compared to the $21 trillion or the $24 trillion of bailouts. So we're doing a poster campaign between now and the presidential election in the United States. Every week we have a new poster. It's called the My 21 2020 because I want people to come to the table in their town hall meetings, when they talk to their, you know, their congressmen, when they talk to the senators. You know, if they're at a presidential rally, I want them to talk about where is the $21 trillion. If you look at our first poster, it's a young man saying, you know, about my student loan debt, take it from the $21 trillion. And then we've got an older woman saying, what, you know, you say my pension fund is underfunded. What about the $21 trillion? This week's is a homeless vet who's saying, you know something? Us vets, we could rebuild the country with $21 trillion. Every week there's one. They're very, very clever. They're very cute. And then Dr. Skinner's daughter was so appalled at what he was telling her, you know, over the dinner table that she wrote a song. And if you go to the My 21 2020 campaign at Solaria.com, you can see it. It's really cute, you know, and it's about the fact that this kind of financial sort of extreme running things outside the law has been going on for a long time. The reason I've kept at this for many, many years, George, is I really believe that we can get that money back.
If it's not all been spent.
Doesn't matter if it's all been spent. Let's just pretend for a second it's all been spent on spaceships. If you look at our 2015 wrap-up, which was called Space Here We Go, inside of it there's a stock certificate in a spaceship, and the stock is owned by John Q. Public. Because I made the case, look, they're assets. All those assets are there.
They are assets. Hold on, Catherine. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back and talk more about this. I'm just wondering if this $21 trillion may have helped prop up the economy. Let's talk about that and take phone calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.